Welcome to a brand new Clan Chat online this week, and we've decided to do something a little bit different. As you can see, it's a star-studded lineup we have for you, and what looks like being a great show ahead, I'll say so myself. Jerry McLaughlin's back, bottom left-hand corner. He's resuming his role in the Craig Peacock mantle on the show. Jerry, welcome back. How are you doing?
In the Craig Peacock mantle? Man, I'm nowhere near as handsome as that guy. That's ridiculous.
Did you see his moustache last week?
Let me just go do my hair. Come
back. Now, between the four of us, we've amassed over 500 appearances in British ice hockey, almost 50 appearances for the GB national team, a Challenge Cup winner's medal, and an Elite League title as well. Now, admittedly, those are all the achievements of our guest in the bottom right-hand corner, Paul Adey. We're delighted to have him on. Former player with Nottingham Panthers and Sheffield Steelers, of course, title winner with the Belfast Giants as the coach, now working with Premier Sports and Free Sports, of course. It's Paul. How are you doing?
I'm doing fine, thanks. How are you doing?
Excellent, thank you very much. Fourth guest this week, top left-hand corner, well-known voice to you all and the second best commentator on this edition of Clan Chat. Jerry's the first, of course. It is the main man himself. It's Free Sports and Premier Sports, man behind the mic even, Aaron Murphy. Good to have you on. Murph, how's things where you are?
All good, Craig, man. I'm looking forward to talking to you. And I want to get a chair like Jerry. He's got the Hugh Hefner chair going right there. He's sitting back.
He's a big brother chair. I've been saying that for weeks.
You need a smoking jacket, Jerry. You need a smoking jacket with like...
I'll get on to that. I just dubbed the chair especially for you today.
Well, let's start the discussion on obviously what's going to be a big week ahead for the Elite League. Just get some thoughts, if you don't mind, on that. Now, unless you've been living on the moon, it's going to be D-Day, really, for the Elite League on Tuesday. We'll find out for definite if we're going to have something of a season to look forward to this year, 2021, very much hanging in the balance. We'll go around the guys, first of all. Murph, how do you see the vote going on Tuesday? Do you think we'll see something happen this season?
Well, look, I mean, you look at what's going on with Boris Johnson and the political brigade. I mean, what's coming down today is you're not even allowed to have more than a couple of people in your house. So look, every day the goalposts seem to change what you're allowed to do in your regular life. So as far as sporting-wise goes and the rules there, I mean, I'm a positive guy, but I mean, it is what it is. What the government's saying is not looking like we're going to have big crowds. So that's a concern. We know that the EIHL has already stated that it's not possible to play without some sort of fan attendance. You hope for the Hail Mary, you hope for the bit of a miracle, but I mean, as far as September 15th goes, that's closing in, and the restrictions keep changing day by day with the government. So, I mean, I'm hopeful that there will something come out of that meeting that might give us a pathway or a framework to how the future will look. But I mean, I wouldn't bet the mortgage that they're going to come out on the 15th and say, hey, we're starting on this date, because no one knows how your regular life or how you return to work or your school, will schools remain open? All that sort of stuff is probably more important to the government right now. For our hopes and our purposes, I mean, look, I'm positive that there will be hockey this season. Will we know definitively from September 15th what will happen? Maybe a bit of a roadmap, I hope.
And Jerry, my concern, I've been thinking about this quite a lot, if we don't have any ice hockey to look forward to this year on a top level side of things, it's the damage it might do. We've seen British ice hockey, again, a standing throughout Europe. The teams have been doing well in the Champions Hockey League, the national team as well. That's going to set things back a bit.
I think it's important to remember, like, hockey's had obviously a kind of volatile fair few decades. And you're right, this is a big thing, but the Elite League is really stable right now. It's the teams that are there are in good shape. The big thing people need to remember is they're all entirely different businesses. The models are so different, it's unbelievable. And adding to that, which I think, you know, Murph just touched on there as well, like politically where it's going, you've got to remember there's different nations here as well, all with different rules. So it's really difficult there. I think in terms of the damage, I think the important thing will be for everyone at that stage to get together, and there should be a common message from the EIHL about how we keep this culture, all the individual cultures and collectively the EIHL culture together, supporting each other and come back, you know, bigger and stronger. I can understand it's going to be, you know, a worry for Team GB, but I do think it might end up not being such a big worry. Like, I don't even know if those tournaments are going to kind of go on. You know, people are resilient. You know, we all believe we're going to bounce back from this whole thing bigger and better. I definitely believe the EIHL will bounce back bigger and better and stronger, whether there's going to be a tournament this year or whether it has to mothball for a little bit. Either way, we're all learning lots of positive things. These Zoom chats, these things, there's things that we should be keeping from this experience. We need to learn from that and move on and keep it as part of that. So I'm not really worried. I think we've got a brilliant culture here. I think it's strong enough to take this, definitely.
And Paul, however you look at it, it's a brave decision to take, basically just scrapping your season and all the things that come with that. Certainly the financial side will certainly be a concern for a lot of teams as well. As someone who's played and coached as well, are you glad you're not playing and coaching anymore when you look ahead to what might be in the next 12 months?
Well, no. I mean, I know what you're saying. It's difficult times. I mean, I wouldn't want to be a player or a coach right now with the situation. And it's not easy to get a job. I mean, a lot of players are looking at the leagues that are going to, start and putting their resumes in there. And it's not going to be a lot of jobs available for these players. And you're going to see a lot of players retire because they're going to stay home for a year and they're going to do something else. And they're going to think, well, I'm making more money doing this. Why am I going to go back to it? So I think you'll lose quite a few players if there's no league this year. But, things will recover. There's always going to be more players coming through the system. And more players wanting to come to Europe and to start in the UK before trying to move on for better contracts. So I don't think it'll be the end of everything if we don't have a season. Personally, I'd like to see a season at some point. I think they'll probably, if there is going to be one, they'll push it back. I think a December start could still be possible if, depending on how things go. I mean, the government has a big say in this, obviously, and they're keeping track of all the COVID cases daily. And, they're making decisions based on the science. So I don't think, I'm going to criticize that because if it's down to the scientists, well, then we just all have to take that in our stride and move on. So, but I mean, I'd like to see some hockey in the Elite League this year. It's not going to be easy. And I think you all agree it's not even 50-50, maybe 40-60 that they won't. So, but we'll see what happens and keep our fingers crossed that maybe they find a way forward.
Now, I've got a question for you here, Muff, from a fan. It kind of touches on a question I had originally, but it's along the same lines. Broadcasting point of view, obviously, you're not going to see, if the league decides it's not going to go ahead, we're not going to see Elite League hockey on television next year. So from a broadcasting point of view, how do you fill that gap? Callum Hill in Twitter's asking, if there's no UK hockey on TV, is there the likelihood we'll see more KHL and NHL or even more classic games? Is that something you can even answer at this moment in time?
No, I think we've all had our fill of classic games. We went through a myriad of that. Let's stay away from that. There's nothing classic about a classic game for the third time. Look, last year, Paul, what did we do? 20 EIHL games? Well, we were supposed to do 20. It was cut short after the Challenge Cup. So that 20 games would be filled by SHL, KHL, some NHL. Don't forget the NHL. It's all going good right now in the bubble. There's problems for the NHL come the start of the next season because they can't play another 9 months in a bubble. New York eventually has to play in New York. Chicago eventually has to play in Chicago. And then they're going to have to come to Toronto and Montreal. So watch that space as well. We're talking about there might not be EIHL hockey. It might be very difficult to start an NHL season in December, which is what they were hoping to do for 2020-2021. As far as filling the schedule, look, 20 games is we'd rather be doing 20 EIHL games. I think Paul would agree with that there. But the SHL is up and running in a week's time. The KHL, I've already done a KHL game last week. We can fill 20 slots. I mean, if you were down 200 slots, 200 games, that's probably a bigger worry if the NHL doesn't get back up and running for Premier. But we'll cross that bridge when it comes to it. But look, for your Twitter question, there'll be plenty of hockey. I mean, I'm in there talking to the guys and we'll do extra SHL, extra KHL. I mean, I drive the guys nuts. I mean, maybe we'll try and get Ben Bounds and everyone else who's gone to the Be at Home League. Maybe we'll try and get some of those games on TV. I'm not promising anything, but these are the conversation that would happen if there is no EIHL.
Murph, we're going to see you guys out on the ice. I think we're going to cut live to a rink and it's going to be Paul Adey and Murph on the ice commentating as they play. That could be popular.
Yeah, well, we're the GoPros. I mean, Paul said earlier he's happy to not be a player anymore because of the contracts and the job uncertainty. I think he's just happy not to be a player anymore because he doesn't have anyone trying to kill him anymore. I mean, Paul played in a tough era, although it might be easier now, Paul. The clutching and grabbing is gone. You'd probably score 200 points in a season. I think, I mean, look, it's it's sad to lose 20 EIHL games. Let's hope again, let's be positive that maybe there'll be a roadmap coming out of the meeting September 15th. Maybe there'll be hockey in December, January, February, whatever. But we'll find a way to fill that with live hockey. There's no doubt.
Okay, thanks, Callum, for your question. Right, we'll move on from that then. That's taking care of itself. We'll find out next week, one way or the other, whether we've got some hockey to look forward to. Let's hope so. But let's touch on your guys' careers now. And we'll start with you, Paul. As I say, a former player and a former coach. Now, during Clan's existence, they're a fairly new team in your experience. You coached in Belfast for a year, 2013-14. What's it like being an opposing coach coming to a place like Glasgow with the Purple Army right behind them?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's great. I mean, I used to love going into a rink where there's a great atmosphere and the fans are behind their team. And I always think, if you have a good team, it brings the best out of them. And I was fortunate to coach a good hockey team in Belfast. And we played some good games in Brayhead to work hard for our wins. And, I think it's a great place, great hockey rink. You know, it's full. It's a great atmosphere. It's not too big. And I think it's a great place to be a fan. I mean, when I go there, Murph and I go there, we always enjoy the atmosphere and we've seen some great games there. And I think it's a great hockey town. And my experiences going in there as a coach, I never played in there as a player, but as a coach, I really enjoyed the experience and had some tough games in there. But for some reason, that brought the best out of the team that I had in Belfast.
Now, talking of your experience in Glasgow, I've had a question from an R. Nickel, if I will just call him Ronnie N. He asks if you remember your initiation into British ice hockey when you were ejected in your first two games, I think you said, at Murrayfield and then at Ayr. I think that was Limekilns Road, the old rink there. Now, he does go on to say memory fading a little bit, but he thinks that's accurate. Is there any truth in that? Do you remember that?
No, it is true. I mean, the first game was actually in the small curling rink in Ayr, and I remember that one because I think it was maybe Rocky Saganek and I got into it at the time. I mean, it's a long time ago. And I don't know, coming out of the penalty box, like I actually got caught in some wires and I had one leg sticking up in the air and I had one leg down on the ice and I'd taken my helmet off because Rocky had said something to me like he wanted to fight. So I said, okay. And anyways, then he skated by me and realized I had one leg up in the air and one leg down. And anyways, I somehow or another threw the whole thing and there were some fights in the corridors. And anyways, I got thrown out of the game in that one. Then the next night we went to Murrayfield and I don't know what it was, but everyone seemed to want to get a piece of me in that game. So I thought I'd come out of the IHL, which was a tough league. So, you know, you're used to having the occasional fight. So I think I fought with, maybe it was Paul Pentland or something at mid ice. And after I finished fighting with him, I had about three, four other guys kind of on my back almost. And anyways, I ended up getting thrown out of that one too. Got back to Nottingham and Alex Dampier was the coach at the time. And Tony Johnson, the general manager at the time, said to him, I don't know about this 80 guy. He doesn't play much and we kind of need to get rid of him. And Alex turned around and said to him, no, this is what we need on this team. We need guys who are going to show up and play hard and you know, look after themselves. Anyways, ended up staying and the rest was history. But you're right. First two games, I didn't play all that much.
Thanks, Ronnie, for your question. Now, one thing I've always wanted to ask you, Paul, and you and I have spoke fairly frequently in the last few years, and it's something I've never quite got round to asking. You won the league with Belfast in 2014, as I said a little bit earlier. You left them after that season for whatever reason. I'm not really wanting to go into that. But how come we've not seen you behind the bench since?
I guess it's just my kids were, you know, when I finished in Belfast, the kids were still pretty young, and I just basically wanted to stay home and not to travel away from the family, and I just wanted to be with the family. That was the bottom line. If I maybe had an opportunity to coach somewhere close, then I might consider it, but I'm happy being home. I mean, I did, you know, I went to Italy and Switzerland, and I was away, and I just didn't want to do that anymore, and I had that experience, and I mean, for me to leave and go coach again, it would have to be for a really, really good contract, and they're far and few between, because there's only a few leagues that pay big money in Europe, and the other ones pay, you know, elite league money, so that's, you're not gonna get rich on it, I'm sorry to say, so, you know, the trade-off is more time with the family, or you know, make an average salary away. And I prefer to stay home with the family and do something else. And I was lucky. Mario Murph pulled me into the Premier Sports to do some work with him. And we've been together ever since. And enjoyed every moment. So, I mean, when I, you know, working with Murphy, you have a guy who understands the game very well, and there's very few people who call a play who have a good understanding of the game, and that makes it easy to work with somebody like that.
Can I ask you, sorry, both Murph and Paul, how do you find it when you're with the UK not being a traditional hockey market? How do you kind of balance off the knowledge that you've got some hockey aficionados watching, you know, the guys in the sport, you know, the coaches, you know, that the fans that are out there that really want to know the hockey, they want to know, understand the systems and the plays. And yet you've also got like a fan base of a lot of people who be like season one fans, maybe haven't even played pro sport. Hockey's got that way of drawing in everyone. You know, how do you know that you've got to keep them, that balance between the story and the skill set? How do you guys feel that you are able to balance that off? And is that something you're aware of doing the play-by-play for Premier?
I think we're aware of it. Paul and I talked years ago. I mean, it doesn't feel that long ago. That's why we know we're having a good time, or at least that's how I feel. But it has been many seasons. And I think when we first started working together, we challenged each other to find that balance, because we did know there would be people that wouldn't know, okay, F1 high, and let's try and make sure that we're not spellbinding people with acronyms and stats and Corsi numbers and stuff that, like, let's be honest, when there's a really good game, like the game will tell the story. So Paul does the analysis, and I think he does it perfectly. There's the technical aspect, but it's also the talking to your pal at the pub who maybe didn't grow up with it from the age of two, and you can break it down really well. And I think Paul does as good a job as anyone, whether it's watching hockey in Canada or whatever, because they know their audience. I think Paul knows his audience because he's coached and played in the league. And I tip my hat to Paul because his analysis is spot on. It tells you what needs to be told from a technical standpoint, but it doesn't spellbind people and go, I don't understand any of this. They can understand it. And I think we challenge each other to find that balance and have the passion, but also have the even keel. And I think we work with each other, bounce off each other really well. And again, Paul does a great job breaking it down for all levels of understanding and knowledge of the sport.
Right, we'll break in just a couple of minutes. But one thing I want to add to that, Murph, talking about your relationship with Paul, was that something that came instantly? You kind of knew your role straight away, and therefore you clicked really well, or did it take a few broadcasts to achieve that?
Well, I was very lucky. I interviewed Paul that year when he won the Elite League with Belfast, and I don't know, I won't speak out of turn. He can answer this. But I thought there was a trust right away. I interviewed him in the Giants dressing room because he said, oh, come on in. And we sat down. It was really a nice shoot with the nice lights and the two chairs there. In the middle of the Giants.
Very romantic.
It was very romantic. It was very... No, and this is no disrespect to some coaches in the league. Some coaches in the league will go, yeah, and they'll stand in front of the brick wall and they'll go, yeah, yeah, not going to tell you who the starting goaltender is. Yeah, yeah. Now, there are coaches who are really, really, really good. And Paul said, oh, come on in. We'll sit down here and bring the camera guys in. And we sat down and I said, I really like the fact that he took the time to do that. And I think he knew right away I wasn't going to throw him under the bus with questions that are going to be like double loaded, or, you know, I'm not trying to make some name as a journalist who's going to find out the big scandal in the Giants dressing room. So I knew right away that we'd be fine, because I thought there was a trust right away from day one when he was a coach and I was a broadcaster. And then when he came on the broadcast side, we slid right in there. From my perspective, it was a nice easy transfer over. And I've like he said earlier, I've enjoyed every minute, because I learned from Paul every broadcast. I mean, Paul's played against Mario Lemieux and Pat LaFontaine, and you know, he's played against some guys that are in the Hockey Hall of Fame. So when he tells you something about where the winger is on the boards and or in a commercial break, and he says, oh, did you see what Matthew Myers there on the face-off, you better learn. And so I've learned a lot, and I think that trust was probably born early on.
Excellent. Well, we'll break there just now. That's the end of part one. We'll find out more about your commentary career, Murph, and we'll have a few other questions for you as well. Join us for part two of Clan Chat in just a minute. Welcome back to Clan Chat Online. This is part two of our special featuring Aaron Murphy, the Premier Sports broadcaster on the top left, Paul Eady in the bottom right, another Premier Sports broadcaster and co-commentator, and our very own Jerry McLaughlin. We're talking about Paul's
Premier Sports broadcaster. Is that right? Isn't it, Murph?
That's right. Yeah, you did. Was it Champions Hockey League?
One and done, baby.
That was a great night. You talk about atmosphere. That the barn was rocking that night, and Finner was the coach at the time, he was given the fist bump behind the bench. I mean, that was a magical night.
You went through your whole Rolodex trying to find a co-commentator. No one could do it. All the way down. Well, you're right. What a night, though. I mean, it was a little bit of everything happened that night. And, you know, and it felt like it was quite an electric night, wasn't it? There was a lot going on, like, around, you know, the league. You just got the sense the whole league really were watching that night. And that's kind of continued for the Premier Sports broadcast. There is that feeling of getting together.
It was so fun. And Matt Keith was the captain at the time, wasn't he? He was unbelievable. You could see why he played in the NHL. And that's why the EIHL is special to me. It's those magic moments where a guy who you go, oh, he played 70 games with the Blackhawks. What's he doing here? Oh, that's what he's doing here. He's beating the DEL. Yeah, like it was a great night. And, yeah, I mean, I don't think we went that far down the list here. I think your name came up right away because Paul had to do a game. Did you have to do a game in Sheffield or Nottingham that night? Wasn't there two teams in the CHL that year and we had to break up the two?
Yeah, Steelers played that year. Yeah.
That's right. So you went to Sheffield and our boss Richard decided Paul was going to Sheffield to have some gravitas there and I was going to Glasgow and they were on alternating nights and we couldn't, whatever reason. Well, that was unbelievable. I remember Finner's reaction. That meant something to him. And anytime you beat a team from a perceived bigger league or whatever, it's always exciting.
Do you know, it was a fun thing to do at the time. When I look at, when you talk about like the kind of commentary and stuff like that, and I didn't grow up playing ice hockey, and you know, and it, for me, I was around that team and I knew them. And for me, I wasn't going to try and talk about systems or anything like that, geez. But like for me, I knew the passion and the story of those players, and I could add that color to them and who they are and what that meant, and add that kind of element to it. And it's fun now from watching your broadcast and listening to Paul and stuff like that, and having been around the club. I mean, it's like 5 years ago now that, you know, and you think, I've worked in hockey every day since from then. Guys like Pete Russell, I've got to say, is one of the best guys to learn from. He'll tell you, even if you don't want to know. Like you know, it's easier to spot the coaches who are line matching, and you spot those kind of things. And Paul, I think you're always so great at spotting when the systems have changed, when a team has actually went, that's not working, and spotting it for me or whatever, maybe take a whole period and go like, they're not doing, dump and chase has changed or whatever, you know, like, but to spot that when it happens, to see what that is, what that change means, you know, that technical expertise is brilliant. But that night didn't need it. It was all story, wasn't it? It was just a very storied night, really, all round.
I think what made it was the ringside reporter and his job at the end of those games. Well, I thought he'd done an exemplary job myself.
It's four premiers. We need to get everyone on. We need to get the whole gang back on.
Yeah, it was very good, and you couldn't have scripted any better because the win was the cherry on top of the cake, wasn't it? Because it was just a great night. You were sold out. It was you know, Finner had that steely look in his eye. I think Finner wanted to play that night. it all came together, and we certainly missed Paul 80 that night, but we did our best.
So Murph, let's ask about your career, your route to commentary. How did you wind up doing what you do now? Give us a kind of bullet pointed kind of career bio, for want of a better expression.
Yeah, I mean, I think back, I've done a lot of jobs in TV, and I think that's why I'm lucky to be in the position I am now. I was willing to do everything from pulling cable to logging tapes to learning how to produce to learn about audio. Although some of the things that have changed over the years, I wouldn't know anything anymore. But at the start, I was willing to do anything. And I think I always had it in the back of my mind that that's what I wanted to do. But in Canada, it seems like such a far away. I mean, I grew up listening to Bob Cole. He's from Newfoundland, and he was a hero of mine. And I was like, wow, imagine like how do you get there? And you'd hear his career story and how he just kept plugging away. So I had an attitude that I just keep plugging away. I did a lot of jobs. I took a year out from TV to do my fireman's service or fireman's courses. I did the physical and the written test and the mental assessment for Ontario Fire Services. I was on a waiting list there. And in between that, I'd worked at TSN and CBC. I'd gone to the 96 Olympics in Atlanta. I got a call from a friend of mine. I goes, there's a company in Dublin, based in Dublin, but they service the UK and Ireland. They have the NHL rights, NASN, North American Sports Network. And they don't really know what to do with the NHL property. You know, they don't know whether Columbus, Nashville is the game or Boston, Montreal. And I was like, okay, well, I'll come over and I'll tell them that's Boston, Montreal. But so I kind of was like production managing that, but they had me doing writing and editorial. And at this point, I'd produced programs. I had done voiceovers. I'd done ringside reporting or pitch side reporting. I was down doing Blue Jays games at one point in Toronto. But that was my first foray into being able to have sort of a little bit of control over editorial content hockey-wise. And long through the jigs and the reels, ESPN bought North American Sports Network. I was moved to London. ESPN said, we like your work. We like that you can produce, you can voice, you can do this. Do you want to go to a Stanley Cup? Do you want to go to NHL All-Star game? So that sort of started to go. But, I mean, I think people think, oh, well, you're lucky and that. No, well, like I did some pretty terrible jobs, you know, working Christmas Day. Logging tapes because the NBA plays Christmas Day, working overnights and missing parties. And, you know, like I paid my dues. And then when opportunity knocked, I knew things, right? I could do more than one job. I could do the production, but I could also do the voiceover. So I think the real break came for me when ESPN lost the Premier League rights to BT Sport. I was offered a job at BT Sport. And I kind of bet on myself. I said, no, I don't want to do that anymore. I really want to just do the play-by-play and that stuff. Because I'd gone to, like, Olympic qualifiers in Riga with ESPN. We did GB in Latvia that year, if you remember, for the Sochi Olympics. And I'd done some things there. I'd gone to Elite League Finals weekends for ESPN to do reporting. And I said, I just want to do that. I don't want to do the production side anymore. And Richard, who is our boss, Paul and I's boss, he gave me a chance to do the Elite League. He knew of me. Those guys in the office knew me from when NASM was based in Dublin. And so I kept a good relationship there. They knew I was willing to do anything. So I came back and they said, well, for the first 6 months, do some program managing and manage the NHL properties and do the Elite League. So for that first 6 or 8 months, I worked 5 days in the office. And then I was away every weekend for the Elite League. Paul was still coaching. I did the IIHF. I said, we got to get GB on TV. I said, we got to get the under-20s on TV. We got to get the women on TV. And it spiraled because people like to watch hockey. And I knew, I bet on myself a little bit, but I said to my boss, we put this on, people will watch. He goes, well, people just want to watch the NHL. I'm like, yeah, but they want to watch the SHL. They want to watch the EIHL. They want to watch. I had just lived in London for 4 years with ESPN. I knew 100 Swedish people. I knew all these Polish people. I knew all these Russian people. They'll watch the KHL, you know, and GB should be on TV and they're going to be playing in Latvia. Or they're going to be doing this or that. So it just kept spiraling. And we've been lucky because usually if Paul or I make a suggestion or we ask to do something, we've had that sort of rope to hang ourselves or do a bad job or do a good job. But yeah, I mean, it seems like it's happened overnight if you think of it in some ways, but I mean, I graduated university in 96. My first Olympics was 96. So it's been a long time coming. And I've had to haul cable and carry kit.
They literally had an Olympic ceremony to celebrate you graduating.
That's right.
Big stuff.
Well, you know what? I was at the finish line. I was hauling cable. I was dirty. It was hot. It was like 45 degrees Celsius in Atlanta. And I was there at the finish line when Donovan Bailey broke the world record in the 100 meters. And as a Canadian, I was like, oh, my gosh. And wow. I'll never forget the cameraman started to move. And I was frozen in time. And he was, like, dragging me as I was supposed to be helping him, supposed to be letting the cable out. And there was Donovan Bailey crossing the finish line, breaking the world record. And so, yeah, I've been lucky. But I was willing to do anything. I didn't graduate from university and go, well, I have to be a reporter. You have to hire me as a producer. I was willing to be the chief bottle washer. I was willing to do all those things. So look, man, I've been lucky too. But yeah, whether it's Olympics or IIHF or EIHL, I think I just try and treat it all the same. Come prepared and enjoy it.
Paul, having worked with Murph, how detailed is he in his preparation for EIHL games? Can you give us an insight into the preparation you both do before a broadcast?
Yeah, just one thing that I want to go back to what Murph was saying earlier. He says he missed a few parties. Well, I think he made more than he missed, just to let you know about that.
Gotta have fun.
But no, I mean Murph, you know, he does a lot of work behind the scenes. You obviously, you know, as viewers, you don't know that, but he's 24/7. I mean, he sprints all over the place. I mean, I can't keep up with him, to be honest with you. And I probably frustrate him a little bit because he's on the go so much. But no, Murph writes everything down too. He doesn't just go to the computer and print things off. He writes every single little note down so that he remembers it and puts his hours of work in for every game. And I've learned a lot from Murph on that front. I mean, I do a lot more prep work than I did when I first started. I'll put my hand up and say it. We've learned from each other, and no, he puts his hours in. He's very meticulous and doesn't leave very many things out.
Now, because this is Clan Chat, we've got to ask you about your experience of coming to Glasgow and watching the Clan. We'll start with you, Murph. Which Clan players would you say you've enjoyed watching in the times you've come here and seen the club firsthand?
A lot. I think I mentioned him there a few moments ago. Matt Keith was a consummate professional. He was always very gracious with Paul and I as well. He got it, right? You could tell this guy played in the NHL because if I came over and asked him a question about something I might say on the broadcast, he had nothing but time. Matt Keith is always very impressive. I thought I always liked Fitzy, his first go around with the Clan. I mean, he was tough character, wasn't he, Zach Fitzgerald, and very, very likable guy. And I joke with him one time, I felt bad because every time we were in town, he seemed to be suspended and he'd be in a suit. I go, maybe we got to stop coming here so that you can actually get on the ice, Fitzy. I thought Brendan Brooks was good. He was good in that champ. Like, I mean, so many guys, but I think when I look back to it, I think it was Matt Keith for me because he was just such a consummate professional, quiet, even keel leader, but spoke up when he needed to, and certainly just silky smooth, but he seemed to do whatever Finner asked of him as well, and I thought he was a joy to watch.
Paul?
In terms of players that impressed me with us, and one guy in particular that really impressed me was Ben Bounds. I mean, I don't know too many goalies who will stop between the second and third period and with a smile on their face and do an interview in a final, you know, like Ben Bounds did on that one day at the final. We had a great final. I'll get those words out there in a second, guys. But he really impressed me how well he dealt with switching off. And goalies, normally, you don't get that from them. But Ben Bounds is an exception to the rule, and he really impressed me that time. But in general, you know, we're quite lucky. The guys, you know, really help us out. I mean, a lot of the British guys, they're willing to go the extra mile and, you know, walk up into the top of the rafters for us and do interviews. So we're very fortunate that we get that kind of support. And to make it a good show, you need the players to be involved, and they're willing to do that for us.
One thing I find from a media point of view, and Jerry, I'm sure you'll back me up on this, is whenever you approach a player for an interview, even just a off the cuff, in my case, sometimes a text message, a quick text message, or just grabbing them off the ice, they're always willing to do it. And I find ice hockey players to be more accommodating than probably any other sport. Jerry, would you agree with that?
Yeah, I mean, I remember, like, before I moved back up to Glasgow, I was working for a TV station called Channel M, and we started doing the FC United was a kind of splinter group from Manchester United at the time. And we started doing, as a channel, a programme about the FC United players. And bear in mind, they're playing in, like, amateur leagues. You know, it's, like, several leagues below being in the kind of professional English setup. And some of the attitude from some of the guys, they thought they were Manchester United players. You know, they got the earring in and they're, like, not looking at the, you know, the presenter in the eye and just talking like that, that uninterested way. And you're right, I've never experienced anything ever like that from a single hockey player. They've always got time for you. And you're right, almost like the higher the profile of the player, the more time you've got for you. You talk about the tough guys in the league, they're always, everyone's like the nicest guys. I guess you can be that nice when you can destroy everyone in the room. but like, you know, Cam Janssen is one that always makes me, I remember, like, talking to him when he came with Nottingham to Brayhead, just the super nicest guy. You would want to hang out with him for all night if he'd let you, and he's just talking to you for a minute. You're like, never got anything but just lovely, just time from guys, because they're real guys and they just love the sport, and they're just much more grounded.
Just funny you say that, and I remember not long after my wife and I started going out, Suzanne, we went to a game together. I was doing my stuff post-game, and you'll remember Sylvain Cloutier, the former Hull coach. Now, Cloutier on the ice was an absolute beast, an absolute monster. Fans hated him because of his style of play, and he came He came round at Brayhead Arena one night. I chatted to him, as you say, you know, really, you know, tough on the ice, but a lovely, lovely guy off it. And I finished talking to him. That was fine. Suzanne was sitting waiting on me, and she says, "Oh, he seems nice. Who was that?" I says, "That's Sylvain Cloutier, the Hull coach." She went, "You're kidding." She says, "I hate him." But just as you say, you know, the guys that they seem to have a persona on the ice, as well as, you know, being themselves off the ice, where you can approach them. It's a great thing to do in our line of work. So, Murph, I wouldn't be right to get you on here talking about the NHL. You mentioned that earlier. You still keep very involved with that. Now, we're at the conference final stage. I must admit, I've not seen any of it because of the time zones and everything else and having a young child. How do you see that going? We've got Tampa Bay 2-0 up in their series, 1-1 between Dallas and Vegas. Who's going to lift the cup?
I think Tampa Bay is going to win that series. I predicted that. If you go on Twitter there, Premier Sports every round makes me make my predictions, which sometimes you come off looking good, sometimes you come off looking silly. But I've got Tampa Bay winning that series, and I've got Vegas winning the other series. So if everyone stays healthy, because, look, I got in trouble picking the Bruins to do all right, and then Tuukka Rask decides to leave the bubble, and you go, well, I picked them before they didn't have a goalie. So if everyone's healthy and it's Tampa Bay and Vegas in the final, which I think those are the two teams that'll get through. I think Tampa Bay, I mean, they've been knocking on the door for so many years. They get to the conference final. They've had some hard luck. They've been a team that has been knocking on the door. So I think Tampa Bay is going to win the Stanley Cup.
Well, you've been keeping a lot of...
Yeah, I am. I mean, originally when I first looked at it, I thought it'd be Boston, Vegas in the final. And like Murph said, Rask decided to disappear and Boston just went downhill. Although I don't know if they would have gotten through Tampa anyways, because looking at Tampa, I mean, if you look at Tampa and the Islanders series right now, Tampa is just way too quick for the Islanders. I mean, the Islanders just can't seem to skate with them at times. And I think Murph says it a lot on the broadcast, speed kills. And right now we're seeing that in that series. And I mean, the Islanders are going to have to come up with something special to come back in that series, because Tampa are looking really solid. And I like Vegas. I think they just have a really strong team throughout the lineup. And I think their depth will win the series and move on to the final. But, you know, we've seen a lot of different things happen in the NHL already this year. So, but that I think Tampa and Vegas would be a good final.
Jenny, I know you kind of watch it, but like me, you've got young children, so maybe you don't get watching it as often as you would like. Have you been keeping an eye on this?
Well, lockdown does strange things to your sleeping pants, doesn't it? So it gives you a good excuse. I mean, I can't watch whole series and stuff like that, but you've got to pick something good because it's been brilliant. Like, I didn't expect the bubble to work like it has, but there's something about hockey where you're like, these guys play competitively when there's no fans there in training. Guys are wanting to get sent up, they're avoiding getting sent down, so it doesn't matter to them. I think it's been an amazing job done. The one that, I mean, I'm a long-suffering Leafs fan anyway, so that was the same as. But I really like the Flyers this year because I've got a bit of a connection with the area and stuff like that. So, you know, and I thought, you know, they had good form coming into it. It was great to see they continued that. And particularly Carter Hart, I had a bit of a soft spot for, because I saw him play for the Phantoms when I was over in Allentown a couple of years ago. To see those guys coming through the rankings, but for him to be so young and perform like that, you're like, geez, the Flyers might just do it. They obviously kind of ran out of steam a little bit. But for me, I'm kind of rooting for Vegas now just for the showmanship at the end. I think everyone wants to see Vegas be part of the Stanley Cup final again. They want to see that bit. And Tampa would be a great final. That speed crossed for that showmanship, that's an interesting series. I'd like to see it.
Good stuff. Okay, well, we'll start to wrap things up. We've got a couple more questions from fans who've been kind enough to get in touch with us. I'll see if there's any more, actually, which while we're on live. But Big Andy is asking, first of all, Murph, the best player you've seen live. Who's the best player you've seen in your line of duty?
Well, as a fan, in 87, the Canada Cup, the famous Canada Cup, when Lemieux scored, Gretzky to Lemieux. But in 87, before they went up to Toronto and Hamilton for the Canada Cup, they played a couple of exhibition games in St. John's, Newfoundland, and I was just a kid. I snuck into the building to watch their practice, and then I managed to get tickets through an uncle. So I saw Canada, the Canada Cup team, play against the Canadian Olympic team, which was amateurs at the time. And I saw Gretzky and Lemieux and Bourque and some of those legends play. But they were going through the motions a little bit. So I'd say the best player I've ever seen in full flow was Crosby, 2014 Sochi Olympic gold final. I was doing the game for the Olympic broadcasting service, so I couldn't get too caught up in the moment as a Canadian. I couldn't be rah-rah because it was Crosby, but Crosby was the best player. He was at the height of his powers, I think, in 2014. So, I mean, as a fan, as a kid, I saw Gretzky and Lemieux, but as a broadcaster, I saw Crosby win a gold medal at the Olympics when all the NHLers were involved. So that was, definitely Crosby, probably the best player I've ever seen.
And Andy's asking as well for you, Paul, best player you've coached?
Best player I've coached. I'd have to think about that for a while. Coach quite a few. I mean,
you totally pulled the rug under Paul there, aren't you? You're expecting the best player question.
I was. You had me thinking the wrong direction. But actually, you know the lockout when the NHL players came over. I had two defensemen playing for us that year, Moran and Nick Boyton, and just watching them play. You could see why they played in the NHL. They were just so smart with the puck, and I mean, Boynton had an incredible shot. I mean, I think in the finals weekend, he scored from outside the blue line, and the goalie didn't even see it. So, I mean, but they were quite special to coach. We had a really good defense. We didn't score as much as we would have liked to, but defensively, we were very strong with those guys at the back. So I'd have to say probably. Boynton was probably the most talented player that I coached during that period. But also I had a guy named Purvis who played for me. He had played with Dallas in the NHL, John Purvis. And he was really a special player to watch. He did things out there a lot of guys couldn't do. And he wasn't a slender, overly quick guy. He was just, the whole package was there with him. And he was really impressive. And he was a good leader. He was a good guy to have, you know, as a coach, to have that kind of player in your room. You knew the guys were always going to show up and play with him there. And there's guys you remember. Like, I remember Eric Charron on defense. I mean, he was probably the meanest, biggest, baddest defenseman I coached. I mean, he just tried to take everyone's head off every time he went to the corner, throwing punches there. I mean, he spent too much time in the penalty box, but he was a monster out there. Nobody wanted to play against him. So there's guys that come to mind. And most of them, of course, have had NHL experience. And that's why they played in the NHL, because they had something special about them.
There we go. One other question from Tammy Hughes. He's taken us back to the GB France game in the World Championships in Košice last year, 2019. Wow, that seems long ago now. When Ben Davis scored that fantastic overtime winner. Tammy wants to know, did either of you celebrate or lose your composure? Murph, I remember your commentary actually, very excited, very passionate at the time. Did you guys celebrate?
No, well, the building started to move, didn't it? The building felt like everything was going to topple over. It was pretty incredible. I mean, look, I saw someone a couple of days after that was live, and I guess Free Sports put the clip up, and someone's like, that guy's got to settle down. And I went, if you need to realize what's just happened, that's obviously someone who has no clue. Like, the fact of the matter is, if you're not excited in your call of that, then you should go call whatever slow pace game, darts or whatever.
Chess.
Because, you know, like that was, you got to remember, we call those guys domestically and we want them to do well when they're playing at that level. That's a moment in time. I mean, Paul played on some very good GB teams, you know, and he knows how hard it is to be in Pool A. So my passion was real. And I would have been the same if France had scored an overtime. It would have been passionate because it's an overtime and a must win. It was there, both teams, game seven. I think Paul will tell you, I call it down the line. Like, I've called some games where GB get hammered and you tell it like it is, and you celebrate the other team's goals in a way that is proper. But yeah, no, I don't think we celebrated. I mean, I think we looked at each other and went, oh my goodness. But like, we still had to do we had to do Canada someone else like an hour later. So, I mean, we didn't get to celebrate till maybe 4 hours later. I think we went and had a meal and maybe an adult beverage. But I mean, yeah, we were excited. I mean, there was no doubt about it. When it got to overtime, I said to Paul on the break, they're going to win. And so I was just waiting for it. I could almost feel it coming. But yeah, it was pretty fun.
Yeah, I mean, I remember when they were down. I mean, as soon as they got that one goal, I was kind of thinking, these guys can do it again here. They're capable of coming back in these games, you know, and they did. I mean, they're an incredible team. I mean, and they've proven it many times. But, you know, when there's a big goal scored, I mean, we're not high-fiving each other's up in this up in the we're trying to be professional, you know. usually Murph is going a little bit crazy. I think I can say that. He gets really excited, which he should be. Like Murph says, it's a big goal and keeps the team in Pool A. I mean, how more exciting is that? Or a goal like Farmer's goal where you score to win goal and move up. I mean, if you don't get excited for that, you shouldn't be watching the game, you know what I mean? But I'm usually, when the goal is scored, I'm trying to, in my mind, I'm thinking, okay, what happened on that play? Because I know Murph's going to come to me at some point. So my focus is more on that than on celebrating the goal. So we both have our roles, and that's what I'm focused on at that time.
And the thing is, just looking back at that moment, such a big, big moment. And, you know, working in the media, and we get frustrated when we don't see ice hockey maybe get the platform we think it deserves. Jerry, when you think back in that moment, it deserved more than what it got, didn't it?
Definitely. I mean, you know, and Paul just mentioned, you know, the fact that the year before they had another tremendous moment. So it's like, you can predict it. It's actually fair to say this is worth looking at. There's been evidence of it previously happening. I mean, I was watching the GB game the following year in a caravan site, and I had my telly in the caravan because it was a lovely sunny day back in the UK. It was in the air of this caravan site, and I was like, this is going to be a good game. I've got a feeling about this. Like, the team had got that kind of character about it, and Pete Russell as a coach has that kind of character. You know he's going to get them fired up. No matter how far back they are, you know he's still giving it the positive and telling them how to do it as well. You know, it's a plan. And we were watching, but there's people coming out of the caravans and all. Kind of, it was a perfect kind of like telly moment where everyone's kind of watching it and they're like, what's that? And I'm explaining it to them. And everyone's just cheering. They've literally only just watched 2 minutes of hockey, the first 2 minutes they've ever seen. And they're like, it's always like this. I was like, no, not at all. And you could have predicted it. So, of course, it's not getting that coverage. When it's got those kind of moments, it deserves to be shared with the nation. The nation needs more of those moments, certainly in sport. So, I totally agree. And those are brilliant examples for us to use to get that coverage.
Well, gentlemen, I think we'll call it a night there on that one. It's been great talking to you guys and hearing your stories and experiences and what have you. We'll be back with another Clan Chat online very soon. But just time to tell you, Clan Classics, we're going on the road now. So the Clan are going to Sheffield Steelers, the game from the end of January 2019. That's worth watching. Definitely, if I remember that one, that was a cracking game. And as usual, 50-50 tickets are on sale, sponsored by Cat House, and you've got your Creation IP shirt off the back, and it's Lyndon Springer. Those are on sale now, so get on the Clan website via social media, however way you want, get those tickets, and look ahead to the game on Saturday. 7 o'clock on the YouTube channel. Don't miss it. It is one not to be missed, that's for sure. Murph, thank you so much for joining us on Clan Chat Online. Great to have you on board.
No problem. Thanks. It was great to catch up with you guys. Hopefully we'll see you at the barn sooner rather than later. Paul and I love going there. It's either Five Guys or one of those other restaurants. It's one of the best stops on the circuit, no doubt.
And Paul, good to have you on board again. Nice to catch up.
Yeah, nice to catch up with you guys too, Craig and Jerry. Always nice to see you guys. And Murph, you take care, buddy. Hey, stay out of trouble there. Don't upset too many people at Premier Sports.
I'll see what I can do. Paul, we're missing each other now. We miss Chris Ellis. We want to get back to it. And I think one thing that we've learned in this is we've got to appreciate when we do get to those games and when we do get to be on site to call those games. And another thing I think we've learned is we've got to be kind and we've got to sort of forget about all the nonsense and all the noise on social media. So to all your viewers, I hope everyone, all the Glasgow Clan fans are safe and well. Gareth and everyone behind the scenes that's always so kind to us, please give them our best. And we really do hope we're at a Clan game soon. And you can bring us across the road there, Jerry. And Paul will spill a bottle of wine and we'll take it from there.
Do you know what, Craig? I've got a feeling here there's a wee emotional moment happening with Murph and Paul. I think when you sign off here, I think we should log out and just leave them in the room and just see what happens. Maybe something beautiful might happen. That's all I'm saying.
Funny, I've just got a text message of Chris Ellis saying, where's my invite? Well, that's for me to deal with. Anyway, good to have you on board, guys. Jerry, we'll catch up again soon. Thank you for watching Clan Chat Online, and we'll see you again soon. Bye for now. Yeah.